Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, David, Jay, and Vicki will meet with Mr. Joseph Sis, Christian County farmer. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Well, hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
Hey, Jay.
David, how's everything out your way this morning?
Pretty good. A little damp, of course. Calving's about to come to an end, hopefully. And we're already started breeding heifers. We've started synchronizing this morning. So we were up early this morning at 6:30 working heifers before the vet had to go do all the dogs and cats. So we got to get him out there to do some stuff before you got to do that.
The wind has started blowing good. I'm hoping everything's still there whenever you get back.
Me too.
In that transition time of the year. I don't know when folks will listen to this podcast. I know it'll air here in another week or two, but we're in that transition time of the year, spring, when our cold fronts and warm weather fronts are starting to clash in our upper elevations, and because of that, we get some pretty drastic extremes in our weather. Yep.
Kind of some violent weather at times, you never know. Just if you don't like the weather, just hang out.
It'll change pretty quick. So. Yep. With us today, we've got Joseph Sisk. He's a farmer in Christian County. I, of course, spent a little over 20 years there as an extension agent. Got to work with Joseph a lot. But, Joseph, welcome to our show.
Thank you.
Glad to have you here with us.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
Take just a few minutes and tell us a little bit about your farming operation, maybe how long you've been farming. I know some of the back history. Your dad and your uncle farmed together years ago. But tell us a little bit about your operation and how you've come to be.
My wife and I have an operation here in Christian County. We farm almost completely in Christian County, just a little bit in Trigg. It's corn, wheat, and soybeans mainly. We're very involved for 5 years with the industrial hemp program. We've grown popcorn and canola, different things over the years, but in general, corn, wheat, and soybeans. I came back to the farm after working retail agriculture in the late 90s and have owned the part of or all the farm now for 23 years. So
good amount of time. I know I came to Christian County and worked in 1998, and I think you were – that's probably when you were in retail at that time.
I quit, I came back to the farm in 98, and okay. My uncle and my father had farmed together for many years, and my uncle was looking to retire and move on, and it was time to – I either had to make a decision then or it was going to get tricky. So he was going to sell it to somebody, and I turned out to be the one, so
– Well, I know as far as examples of leadership goes, you spent a lot of time in and around your farm operation, work with a lot of different groups, and one of those groups is the Kentucky Corn Growers Association. Tell us a little bit about your involvement with that group and how long that's been.
I've just rotated off the board. You can serve on the board for 9 years, and you have to rotate off for 1 year. You could go back on. It's sometimes people do, sometimes they don't. During that time, I also became I was also appointed to the Kentucky Corn Promotion Council. So the Corn Growers Board is a members board. The Kentucky Corn Growers Association, you pay membership dues, either do it for a lifetime membership or you can do it yearly. And that organization can go and advocate and lobby and do things that, because it's a member organization, you're paying dues every year or a lifetime membership. The Corn Promotion Council is what was mandated, had to be in place when the checkoff was put in place. Those funds that are held from your check for checkoff purposes cannot be used in any way for any lobbying efforts. It can, research, education, promotion, those things. And so I've really enjoyed my time on both boards and am going to continue on the Kentucky Corn Promotion Council for so long as the board continues to appoint me.
That's been a long-standing run, and I know having been here and having worked during a lot of that time, I know a lot of folks locally appreciate your involvement with those groups just because of the insight that you not only give to those associations but the insight you get from the others that you serve with.
It was real important to me. I went into that into that position after having served on local things and maybe a couple of state things, but mostly local things. And, those that most people have had enough contact to know, but those who have not, Laura Noth is our executive director. and Adam Andrews, his staff, and just incredible ability to promote corn, to know where, you know, help direct us in ways that those both those monies need to be spent, but also on the from the board standpoint, from the Corn Growers Association standpoint, you just don't. You don't go anywhere with either of them in D.C. or Frankfurt or on local legislative visits that they are not, you know, very, very knowledgeable of the people we're meeting with personally. You know, both of them have done it for a really long time and are both incredibly talented at it. And corn growers in the state of Kentucky are well served by that organization because of them. I think we have the best staff in the U.S. You know, I served. I've just come at the end of my term. I was president of the association, and before that was a vice president, you know, for a few years. And so you get to go do leadership things in the U.S. You know, you get to go for, you know, for the state president's association meetings and different things and come in contact. I mean, lots of states have really good staff, but nobody in the U.S. has staff that's more capable or more talented than Lauren Adams. We are very fortunate about that.
I've had the good fortune to know them both very well. Of course, mm-hmm. Laura, before she came back to Kentucky, spent time in Washington with Farm Bureau,
right.
and that certainly helped develop a lot of those relationships
right.
that she was able to carry over into corn growers. Adam, I was talking off camera or off air about having duck blinds in Missouri. Adam and I used to share a pit together. So,
yeah,
he's spent a lot of time traveling with him too.
He really enjoys that. So.
Yeah. So good folks.
Joseph, talk a little bit about maybe one of the most the issues that maybe you worked on that you felt like was the most important while you were on the corn growers board.
You know, from an advocacy standpoint on the corn growers board part of it.
Mm-hmm.
A continuing fight about ethanol, about biofuels, excuse me. I think that probably, you know, it consumes a third or more now of the U.S. corn crop, well, about a third of the U.S. corn crop. And it is on both sides of the aisle in Washington. It is both strongly supported and strongly opposed. And so it takes a lot of work there all the time to make sure that there's nothing going on that shouldn't be going on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because as a group, farmers are working directly against a very, very strong influences from the petroleum industry. And they have a very concentrated effort because there's not very many of them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's literally tens and tens of thousands of producers in the U.S. that are producing, you know, most of the corn in the U.S. And so without that advocacy of national corn and the state organizations, we would have lost it. Under multiple administrations, there is not a time where there's not kind of a problem, you know,
mm-hmm.
or a problem that needs circumventing. So I would say, you know, in general, that's a big deal. During my time as my last couple of years, one of the biggest things we advocated for and worked strongly against were the efforts of the EPA to take atrazine away from us.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's, you know, again, if you're not directly involved, I would encourage everyone, and we can talk about that later, I would encourage everyone to be involved with these boards. But sometimes it looks like that money's kind of drifting off into a vacuum. In the case of, you know, it's funny because some of these things bleed over. We can't lobby with that money, but what we can do with that money is research what is really going on with atrazine, right?
Mm-hmm.
We can research what is really going on with ethanol. We sponsor lots of events, but we also spend a lot of money on research about how to make sure and prove that as we go from E10 and E15 that the motors can handle it, that it doesn't hurt small engines. We go through, spend a tremendous amount of time, I did, traveling. Adam spends worlds of his time and effort, and we spend lots of money in the boating world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so
mm-hmm.
that, you know, again, if you're not directly involved with that, it would be hard to, you wouldn't know that happened. It's important mm-hmm. that we tell that story, and it's important that producers ask. But it is a tremendous effort to keep ethanol correct. That is not just something that's going to stay there. If you work in the void, if you were to work in a void without national corn and state organizations, we would not have ethanol at the level we have in the U.S. today. And we ramped our production up, right, to use 4 mm-hmm. billion bushels or thereabouts now to make ethanol. And, you know, without national corn and without Kentucky corn growers, there's not some individual farmer from this area or any area that's going to go to D.C. and say, hey, leave the ethanol deal alone and please don't take my atrazine away. Yeah. They don't care. You know, they just don't care because there's nobody up. There are very few. We actually have one from this district, but there would be very few legislators up there that would know what atrazine meant. Right. Or even what that was. So I think those were two great big issues, that the ethanol problem and the efforts of the EPA to do things that were non-scientific about atrazine.
Yeah, those are good ones. You know, I think of the way you explained that, and you really see then that one of the things the corn growers or any of our commodity groups do is they give a voice to groups rather than just individuals going out and having to fight this fight on their own. They give a voice to whole segments of agriculture across the country.
Yeah, because if you know, in any of our areas, if you thought of the most whoever you thought was the most powerful, influential person in agriculture in your area, if they went to Washington, D.C. and tried to work against Exxon, well, that ain't going to happen, right? Or if they go to Washington, D.C. and go and say, we would like a meeting with the head of the EPA on this problem, it ain't going to happen. So sometimes it is a question about where those things are used and how they're used. Again, there's a separation. There's the go lobby for a law situation about these things. That is only your growers association. Mm-hmm. That is not the money that's held from your check. But what your money from your check can be held for and used for properly, and it's so important, is we go research what ethanol means in your engine. We go research and prove things about atrazine and its usage. And again, if that money wasn't there, that money wouldn't be held from your check. Two things. You wouldn't have ethanol anymore. And corn prices would be in the tank, right?
Right.
Sometimes they go in the tank anyway, but they would definitely be in the tank. And then you would be, I personally believe at this point, we would be in a situation where our crop chemistry situation would be limited like it is in most areas in Europe, which would be devastating for us here with our no-till situation.
Yes, I agree with that 100%. And, you know, the great thing about that, and then, too, I don't think we always do a good job explaining what those monies are used for. You know, I don't think we get a lot of PR about that. So it's great that you're here talking about that. But, you know, it is so important for those dollars to be used for that research, to be, you know, so you dispel the myths that a lot of people, and, of course, everything on the Internet's right, you know, that kind of stuff. So hopefully we are able to dispel a lot of those myths that go on out there in the public.
You know, the monies that are spent that are so visible to individual growers would be if they went to Princeton, if they ever, you know, hopefully one when day. They go to Princeton and go to a field day and they see the research and there's a sign. This research sponsored, you know, Dr. Chad Lee standing there in front of a nitrogen research project that corn growers sponsored, or standing in front of a soybean situation that the Soybean Growers Association sponsored.
Right.
That's a very visible thing. You see it, whatever. But the huge monumental efforts, the things that really protect us in our industry, you can't hang a sign on it. I can't hang a sign on every time that Laura or Adam or, you know, either people on the Corn Promotion Council like me now or people on the Corn Growers Board, especially leadership like Josh Lancaster is the new president. You can't hang a banner on it every time he goes to D.C. and does that. We, you know, we try to take a picture and put it on Facebook. Somebody might see it. But, you know, they probably just think we're on some, you know, free trip to D.C.
Right.
Like we didn't have, you know. And so, and the other part of that is all of these people that are doing that are, you know, they're volunteer. And those, you know, the Corn Growers Association Board, again, I've said this before and I'll say it again, the most professional board I have served on, you know, outside of maybe my involvement with a bank board, because that's a different situation, but outside of a, you know, like a truly professional board like that, it's the most professional people I've been around, and I learned so much from them. You know, with people like Richard Strode or Philip McCown, or you could name them forever. But the people that I served with on those boards, I got to see that, see how they handled themselves, on the board. They're all there volunteering that, you know. I mean, there is no, we're not getting paid. There's a little per diem you get, you know, but and on our board, that's all given back to a scholarship situation. Nobody accepts the $35 a day or something. It's not much. But they're on a volunteer basis. They're leaving their farms, they're leaving their business, they're leaving things undone at home, and I'm not on it anymore, so I can say this: they deserve a lot of thanks and praise for that. Mm-hmm. And the other boards also operate very well. I'm just speaking to the one that I've served on. You know, I don't know, people around the state are going to know someone like a Ray Allen Mackey. That's not somebody that's just out looking for something to do.
Right.
But it's vitally important that he's chairman of the Corn Promotion Council because he carries so much weight.
Right. You know, I think back to my time here in Christian County. I've made this comment all across the state. We had no shortage of good leaders here in Christian County.
That's 100%.
And they've been able to get out and go and be leaders all across the state and all across the country. But it's the same everywhere. Across our state, we've been blessed to have great leadership, and those are all the people that you've just named.
So, that's exactly right.
Yeah. A lot of that starts at the local level, you know, NRCS boards or whatnot, and FSA, and moves on up from there.
Joseph, how important is it for younger people and middle-aged people and of course, the older people that have been doing this for all these many years, how important is it for them to get involved in these leadership opportunities?
I think it's important on multiple levels. I'll work this thing backwards. I think it's really important for young people to do it for their own benefit, their own mental health, their own, as they get older, they'll have a lot more connections. It is a hard thing to learn to turn that off for a minute about what you've got going on in your world, on your farm. It's very difficult for me. It's going to be real difficult for anyone because we are all, most of us, and by all of us, are from a social situation in farming that you dealt with that. Whatever the thing was, you were the one dealing with it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if I'm in the middle of dealing with it and I want to finish it so badly, but I got to be somewhere tomorrow morning, I got to leave. It's a hard thing to learn to do. So what I would say, it's real important early on to do a little, to can maybe take small steps with that on your local level, agree to do some of those things. I would encourage any young person, because I know multiple people that have done this, including myself, is when they do start doing that in their 20s, hopefully, to say no a lot. Because once you say yes and you look like someone that's going to be capable of doing that stuff, and you're young and ambitious and full of energy, you'll say yes to everybody and you'll burn out. Mm-hmm. And then you'll just stop doing everything for a while. You see it out of most people. I would encourage a young person to say no to everything but maybe a couple of things and just do those couple of things and learn how to do those things. And then as far as the state boards go, there's always opportunities to go serve on some of these things. They need people on committees. Kentucky Corn Growers Association has the CORE program. Mm-hmm. Go do that. You know, do those things. Because it teaches you to get away from the farm and to turn it off for a minute. Because as you get, I'll be 50 this year. As you get older, you need to turn it off. You know, Dr. Steve Isaacs has this thing he says about it's not recharging the batteries. That's too easy. But he's got a little he's got a little thing he says, and it's 100% right. You know, you've got to, it's sharpening the axe. What he talks about, you know, and so you've got to be able to turn it off and go do those things, or you'll get older and you'll get in your own little thing and you close up and you really don't know what's going on.
Yep.
You really don't know what's going on. So I would say educationally, mental health standpoint, that's important. For the board's standpoint, you learn and gain an understanding about why it's important that new people are rolling on and off those boards and how important, especially the commodity groups. The more contact that more farmers have with those commodity groups, the greater an appreciation they have for where that money's going. Because if you sell very much $6 corn at all, you start looking at the bottom of that check and you're like, man, that's a lot of money, right? You start, you know, and it can bother you, but it doesn't bother me because I've been around Laura and Adam. I've been around these boards. I know what they're going to do in all these situations about research and education and all these things, and it doesn't bother me at all. So if you're involved in it, you'll understand why it's important.
Yep.
Well, that's the educational part of it. I mean, you know, education is a key in a lot of things, and I've said that several times, we all have, and I know you have said it in the roles that you've had, it's education and getting the word out there and to everybody to know what that association doing, what that promotion board is doing, and behind closed doors kind of thing of like those things that you're talking about, that this is the things that's going on all the time. You know, it doesn't stop. It never stops, and I think that's important. And so if somebody has never been on a local level leadership role. Let's say they've never like been on a Farm Bureau board or Extension Council board or anything like that. I mean, what advice do you have to somebody, say, in their 20s, as you've referenced, on how do they go about getting involved?
You know, later in my time, I made a better move than I made in my 20s. So what I will tell you is later in my life, maybe in my 30s, when I started thinking more about these things, I approached an older local leader, mm-hmm. and said, I know I'm not involved like I should be, and I'm thinking about that some, so give me some advice. You open your mouth on that, and we're going to get you on something. I mean, you're going to be on something. You know what I mean? Yeah. If a talented young 25-year-old walked up to me at my age now and said, I want to start doing a little something, what would you recommend I do? Well, I'm going to make a recommendation, but then I'm also, as soon as they're gone, I'm going to make a phone call. You know, I'm going to call. Right. If it's the extension office or wherever, I'm going to call and say, hey, you know, write this number down. You can call them. They're looking to get involved. Yeah. So yeah. That's where they should go. Mm-hmm. Don't stumble into it, because you're going to talk to somebody, whomever, that's been on something, and they're going to steer you away from a place where you would be spinning your wheels and not doing any good. Mm-hmm. Because I mean, at my point, at my age, you get into people even 10 years younger than me. You know, if one of them walked up to a Michael Lester and asked him, he is immediately going to steer them maybe towards something that is worth their time off the farm. Mm-hmm. And if they say, hey, so-and-so's asked me about doing this or whatever, or look at them and say, you know, I would probably tell you that's not something I'd do. Mm-hmm. I think that's an absolute way. Do not walk up to someone who's looking for a board member and ask them.
Yeah.
You will get
you'll be
vice chair overnight. Right. So don't do that.
Don't miss a meeting.
And I'm going to say this while we're talking about this, because this is unbelievably important. Do not get on anything and not show up.
Absolutely.
The biggest thing that you can exhibit as a leader is showing up. You don't show up, you're not a leader. You don't show up, you're hurting the board.
Yep.
And if you don't show up, you're being insulting to people who have a lot more going than you do. You know, I was fortunate enough to be in the Ag Leadership Program several years ago, and I got to speak to them, and we were talking about things. And what I say to any young group, older group, whatever, everybody's busy. You get on these things and you get involved in these things and you find out you're not as busy as you thought you were. Mm-hmm. I have been involved with, I think I have a sizable operation. I enjoy what I do. It keeps me very busy. There's something to do all the time. I am around people on these boards that make it look like I'm running a lemonade stand.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And so that's important to go see that. And what I would encourage anyone to do is don't not show up and in your mind say, well, it's because I'm busy. Everybody that did show up was busy. If you show up, you can make it happen.
Everybody's busy.
Everybody's busy.
Everybody's busy.
I want to reiterate that. I had a situation years ago where a guy was missing a lot of meetings. And wasn't my group, it wasn't my board, but it was a board that I served on with this individual. And he said, I feel like when I go, I'm just wasting my time being there.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, you're wasting their time by not being there.
It's insulting.
At least get off the board and let somebody take your place that wants to be a part. So that's good advice.
Everybody's busy. Don't tell somebody you're not showing up because you're busy. Now, we all have life things. I mean, something comes up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, The family vacation just had to be that week. 1 year, if you miss one meeting out of seven or eight, nobody's going to say anything. But if you're missing because you say you're busy, then everybody's busy.
I think that you've got to make that commitment in your own mind before you ever make the decision to step into any kind of leadership role, even if it's what we're calling a local level, not on a state level. But it's the same is true regardless, and I think that's important to say. Make sure that you want to make that commitment before you go down that path.
That's correct.
Because it's not just affecting you when you don't show up. It's affecting everybody else and the people that you're representing by having that leadership role.
Well, and if all the busy people in the room didn't show up, what would we have?
Exactly.
You know, nobody.
I had an ag teacher in high school tell me, he said, you know, I needed to get something done. He was telling me, you know, and he said, I said, well, who'd you give it to? And he said, well, so-and-so. And I said, wow, they got a lot going on. Why'd you do that? And he said, because a busy person and a hard-working person will get it done, when somebody's not doing anything, they'll never get it done.
Same thing I was always saying. You know, if you want something done, give it to the busiest person you know.
Yeah, yeah. I never wanted to call a repairman that was free at the time.
No.
Had time to come do it right. wait for a good one.
That's a good point. Well, Joseph, I know you serve on a Ag Water Quality Board as well. Tell us a little bit about that and kind of what that's all about as well.
So the Ag Water Quality Authority in the state of Kentucky was established when the Water Protection Acts were put in place in Kentucky. And because of great leadership and people that were able to go get these things done, it was established in such a way that there are three at-large agriculture members at all time. It was an internal decision, but in addition to that, business cannot be conducted in that room unless two of the three are in the room. The wonderful opportunities of Zoom, but they have to be legally present.
Right.
The Ag Water Quality Authority does not in itself establish any rules, any regulations, but what it does establish are your best management practices that would be in the Ag Water Quality Plan. Mm-hmm. Every producer in the state of Kentucky should have an Ag Water Quality Plan. I've been guilty of it. Everybody's going to be guilty of letting that thing lapse just because of whatever. A lot of times through EQIP or different things, we're forced to see, do we still have it or, you know. Right. And the reason you want your Ag Water Quality Plan is this. If you have a violation on your farm and the Division of Water shows up, nobody at the Division of Water is going to usually really blow you up. But if you have that Ag Water Quality Plan in place, then you go through, it's a whole different discussion than if they show up and you have an overtopping lagoon because we've had a flood. Seriously.
It happens.
Sure. Yep. Or you have a stream crossing that was developed and built and now part of it's blown out by a storm or whatever. Mm-hmm. Whatever the violation might be, or if you have those best management practices assigned in your Ag Water Quality Plan, it's a whole different discussion than if they show up and say, do you have it? Because you have the protection of that. I have my Ag Water Quality Plan in place. Okay, well then, you know, we need to go deal with these things, right?
Right.
So you need to have it. You're supposed to have it. But what the Ag Water Quality Authority does in a non-regulatory fashion is we establish the things that you can have in that plan. Mm-hmm. It is, I think, a very, very important board for farmer involvement, in that we have lots of really good, smart people on there, but we have very few farmers. Mm-hmm. It's a big board. There's somebody that Commissioner Quarles will have put on there. There's somebody that's going to be representing the Kentucky Office of Ag Policy. There's going to be somebody representing, you know, Extension. There's going to be somebody representing all these places. But functionally, actual people that are farming in are actual producers. Hopefully the person from Farm Bureau right now, Larry Thomas, hopefully that person's a farmer. But outside of it, there's three at-large farmers. And so if we didn't have that, in the time I've been on it, maybe for 6 or 7 years, it's hard to remember how long I've been on it, but there have been multiple things come up in front of that board. How to deal with sinkholes in fields, you know, setbacks off sinkholes. And you're the one in the room saying, well, I got a 25-acre field, and I can never be more than 100 feet away from a sinkhole. You know, right. Seriously, I live in Christian County. Come check me out. So, you know, my whole farm's a sinkhole waiting to happen. So whatever is the new BMP that's being discussed, those farmers are in the room. And so it's a very important board. We don't meet that much. It's quarterly. And, again, it's not something that's really exactly regulatory, but working it out from the other end of that, it ends up being the things that you used to be in compliance, from a regulatory standpoint.
Sure. It's another opportunity for agriculture to have a seat at the table.
You bet, yeah.
And that's more important now than it's ever been. Talking earlier about corn grower research projects, and I think back to my time here in Christian County and a project that they helped fund that did a lot of water quality work that basically set some guidelines that said, hey, if agriculture is an issue, we're going to find that out and we're going to fix that. We know that project. We know in a lot of instances agriculture didn't turn out to be the issue that everybody pointed fingers. Very, very important work, because so oftentimes agriculture ends up being the easy scapegoat. But when we have a seat at the table and we have the opportunity to have people like you representing farmers having a seat at that table, then we have a voice and we have a chance to say, no, it's not exactly that way.
Well, because in that room, we have really good, smart, talented people in that room from the Division of Water. We end up with discussions in that room about these things that can affect stuff that aren't about the Ag Water Quality Plan. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because we have a seat at the table and we're sitting with them and we're discussing it. All right, if the farmers aren't in there and that discussion goes off the rails by people who are not functionally farmers, smart, educated, well-trained people, but they're not farmers, you let that discussion go off the rails and get everybody's mind twisted the wrong way, and good luck getting that thing turned around.
Yeah,
but
if you're in the room and they say something and you hear it, and you say, whoa, wait, guys, this is how this works, and if y'all do this, it turns out like this, and we can't do whatever. And they go, well, okay, right, didn't think about that. And it stops. Mm-hmm. It stops. Yeah. You hope it stops.
Yeah.
Something I heard Mr. Wayne Hunt say years ago, and you've probably heard him say this too, is they can't talk about you if you're there.
They don't talk about you. Well, they don't talk about you nearly as badly.
So important stuff, certainly.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and it's great. And for those folks that are listening that may not be from Kentucky, we have an opportunity. You can go to your Soil Conservation Service office, mm-hmm. and fill out an ag water quality plan for your farm. And I think that's a great resource that a lot of people don't use. And a lot of times the why they use it is because they're getting some kind of cost share or something like that. But we really ought to be thinking about the long haul, and we ought to, be filling out those ag water quality plans for our own use.
And as an authority, in the time that I've been on it, probably one of the things we have spent the most time on is that thing's online now.
Yep.
And it has, hyperlinks, and it's easy. Yep. Get online and do it. It's been a tremendous amount of resources and time. Paulette Akers has been a huge lead on that and has been mm-hmm. fantastic. And it's been a big deal. It's online now. Yep. Go do it. I mean, you can go down and pick up the book and fill it out if that's what you want to do. It's fine, mm-hmm. 100%, just so you have it. But if you want to do it, if you're so inclined to use your computer, it's mm-hmm. right there. Just yep. I guess you'd have to go through the hyperlinks on the Division of Water's website. Mm-hmm. You'd have to get on the – it would either be that or under the State Conservation. So y'all better fact check me on that one. But you can. but if you Google the Kentucky Ag Water Quality Plan, you're going to end up in the right place. And
right.
It is online now, and it just has made – we really, really want people to use that a lot. You can still print it off. You can do whatever. Yeah. Again, like you said, go down there and get the book, fill it out. But it is online.
Well, and like you said, a lot of the driving factor for some of folks to do that is cost share. A lot of times you alluded to that earlier, and then David, mm-hmm. you did too. And that is true. But even if that is a driving point, you're still learning things as you fill it out. You're still forced to think about a few things that you may not have thought about if you wasn't going through that application to complete that water quality.
It's not hard either.
No,
it's just simple.
I couldn't count how many producers have told me through the years, hey, I read through those BMPs and I got to looking at this one in particular and I've been doing this wrong.
Right.
It's easy to pick out something that you see easily that could apply to you in your operation mm-hmm. right now today.
Especially, of course, we've had cattle on the farm, but we don't right now have livestock. Outside of my normal world, when I fill out the homestead part, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And I look at it, I'm like, oh, whatever. The thing is, I don't know whatever the thing is. I'm not going to own something sitting here. But if it's outside of what it's on my farm, I have to deal with it. It has to be part of my ag water quality plan. I don't want to ever think about it.
Yep.
And then I do think about it. And I do think about whatever is said about chemical storage or a cistern or a septic, whatever. It's in there and it makes you think about it. I'll say this because this is an important part. We were talking about the importance of having farmers on there. About the time I came on, there was some talk of making the BMPs enforceable. And, of course, you have farmers in the room. I was 100% against it. I took my daughter that's in college now, maybe she was 12 or 13, and she left there thinking we were all in a fight. And I said, no, that's just a good discussion. But I said, if y'all make them, again, have the farmer in the room. Yeah. I listened to it, and I said, let me tell you what's going to happen. If you make the BMP enforceable, I'm going to pick the easiest thing on your list that does nothing.
Yep.
If you can't make it enforceable, it's a best management practice. you can't, if I pick something that's a good new thing for me, whatever, and I miss the target, and you show up and you're going to enforce that some kind of way, I'm not going to pick those things anymore. Well, then we're losing where we're trying to go. Mm-hmm. Yep. If I wasn't someone who actually functionally went and did that on a farm every day, I'm not. It's not just me. There were all the farmers in the room are on board for this. I'm not trying to take credit for that. My point is that if the farmer's not in the room, other people aren't even going to be thinking down that road of, if I put that grass filter strip around the sinkhole and it doesn't work out, what's going to happen? So
Oh, I agree with that 100%. You know, and the shame of it is, Joseph, if we had more of those kinds of boards and things that actually had farmers on them that were making those decisions, like in Washington, D.C., if we had more people that – and then I guess that's kind of falls back on us, is we've got to educate those folks about that. But if we had more folks that were actual farmers, it would be – things would be a little bit different, I feel like, you know, would be a little bit easier for us.
I'm going to hit on that for a minute, and I know this goes all the over, this goes different places in the state, obviously. But there were – it was more than just – Mr. Hunt, but when I was getting out of college, right,
yep,
in 1996, up until now, there has been a concentrated effort in Christian County always to make sure there's farmers on everything. We got farmers on the, we have farmers on the library board.
Yeah,
put farmers on everything.
School board.
School boards. You know, Mr. Bruce Klein got off the Planning Commission many, many years ago, and I ended up on it for 12 years. Because Wayne Hunt called me and said, "I need to talk to you a minute." Well, Lord, why am I going in there? You know, whatever. And so I go in there, and he says, "You're going, you know, we're going to try to get you on the Planning Commission. Would you serve on the Planning Commission?" I said, "Why do you?" And he explained why. And then I get on there, I'm like, "Oh yeah, we need a farmer on here because, you know, there were things being discussed that affected agriculture." Mm-hmm. So there are leaders in communities, not just ours, but people like Mr. Hunt that had that foresight, and then we've ended up doing that, and it breeds more people wanting to be involved with more things, because the first time you're in the room and something gets discussed that's harmful to us, and you have you get to help at all with any, it empowers you, and you say, "Well, this is part of my life now. This is going to be part of my career, is making sure that there's not something that happens that hurts my industry." So
yeah, you know, it'd be great if all local communities would try to do that, and I know there's a bunch more.
Oh, there's many.
Yeah, yeah. But
I'm just only aware of ours.
Right, right. Yeah. But I mean, you know, it'd be great if folks that are listening that do have some influence in agriculture, if you know, if you could do that for us, that would be great, you know. So,
well, I will say, since I'm the only one that doesn't live in Christian County, I think at this table, I'm in Webster County, but I don't want to let it pass by that Webster County's got a lot of good leadership, and it has in the past. And you mentioned Josh Lancaster, now the president of the association now, and he's in Webster County. He farms in Webster and Hopkins and McLean, actually in all of our counties.
Right.
And, you know, he's taken on that role. But then we've got some other producers and that has carried some – been on some, you know, not just local, but state national boards. And it is important, and it does make a difference, because then it puts your county – it puts you all on the map too. And not from a personal recognition – but for speaking for all of agriculture and speaking of that industry and being the voice for not just themselves. It's not about that. And I listening to you, it's not about you.
Mm-mm.
It's about your industry, and it's about what you do and what others do and making sure that that's protected.
I have a great friend here who, this came up over Super Bowl weekend, asked me about why I continued to be so involved in some of these things. You know, like, what's the end game there? You know, he was trying to get his mind wrapped around it.
Right.
And I didn't really have a good answer for him, because you're not going to get paid for any of this stuff. Yep. I mean, you're not getting – if it's a board that's important to agriculture and it's really important to agriculture, you will not be paid. It's going to cost you a lot of money. No, I shouldn't say it would not cost you a lot of money, but, I mean, you're not going to get paid. And I couldn't get it – I wasn't eloquent enough to explain it to him about why I'm in these rooms and I go, "Oh, my gosh, I'm so glad I'm here today." Or – you know, "Oh my gosh, I'm so glad Ray Allen Mackey's sitting over there dealing with that, and I don't have to deal with it and let him talk about it." But whatever it is, you know, so it is really, really important, and you can't know it until you go do it.
Well, and that's too, if you're getting into that role because you want to get some recognition for Uno number one, you're probably not the best person to be on that board. And I think that's the difference. You can't put it into words because it's not about you.
Right.
And we see that sometimes, though, and oftentimes people, you know, stair-step. They use opportunities like that for exposure so they can move up to that next
right.
level. But we don't often see that with our agriculture producers who serve in this capacity. It is more about serving their community more as a whole or serving their industry as a whole than it is advancing their own agenda.
Well, because in his, you know, because in his life and in the profession he's in, you would maybe try to get on some corporate boards and get on a bigger corporate board, and that is a different thing. That is a maybe an income earning thing or whatever, not about protecting, because he doesn't really need that in that instance. In the most instances, he doesn't really, he's not going to have an opportunity to go serve on something that protects his industry. In our world, we serve on things that functionally protect our lifestyle.
Absolutely.
Yep. Absolutely. I agree with that 100%. And, you know, hopefully folks that are listening to this will take some of what you're saying, Joseph, and apply it, especially those younger people that need to when they're 22 or 3, get out of college and in agriculture, they'll say no a little bit. And, you know, hopefully that will, you know, inspire them when they get into their 30s. And, you know, when I say the best experience is the one you needed right after you needed it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, so with any good experience, you know, if you're trying to get that. But to get that wisdom, you got to fail some. And you got to be in part of what's going on in agriculture to understand that.
And so, at the very least, if you're not the type of person that feels like that you want to make that step and be – maybe fill the leadership role, you can join. You can be a member.
Sure.
And you can, you're making a difference just by doing that, because it does take money to do the things and the research and the things that you're talking about. And there's power in numbers. So like you had mentioned, you know, there is powers in numbers. So even, you know, join. I'd encourage you to join those associations.
I've known a lot of producers that did this too. Maybe they were not willing, or maybe not felt like they weren't the right person to go and serve, but they could support the people who did go and serve. They could be that sounding board back home that you could bounce ideas off. And that's certainly important to have as well.
You know, a lot of the people that are in leadership positions on these organizations, you know, are the ones like, maybe that also got in trouble for talking too much in second grade. So, you know, but some of the most important people on these boards don't end up in the leadership positions on the boards. And they're the most, some of them, I mean, I'm not going to name them, but on the corn growers board, some of the people that if I wanted, you know, I was like, man, we need some help with this. I'm trying to figure out how to go get in front of the right people about this. Some of the people on the board I'm going to call, they'll never serve in a leadership position on that board. They don't really like it. Maybe they don't want it. Maybe they're quiet. Maybe they're whatever, or they seem quiet. They're not quiet. That's the wrong word. But so you can be on that board and you can be crazy influential. You know, Wayne Hunt's got a great saying: the best position on a board is to be the chairman, but not be the chairman.
That's exactly right.
That's right.
So, well, the chairman usually doesn't get a vote.
That's right.
You know, one of the things we always do towards the end of our show is we like to wrap things up with a timely tip, and we try to keep it something relative to the time of the year, but also relative to the issue or conversation that we've been discussing. And, you know, our timely tip today is just for folks to get out and learn more about their commodity groups and where their checkoff dollars is going. I think of a lot of the partnerships that we as University of Kentucky have had with the Corn Growers Association, with our other commodity groups. We, among anybody, could be doing more to get out and help tell that story, just like the producer members could.
If you, and this is available to anyone, if you call the wonderful staff, the Soybean Board at Princeton, you call the staff of Kentucky Corn Growers, you get online and find it, you find Kentucky Cattlemen, you whatever, call the number. And you ask them, look, this money's being held out. Do you mind talking to me about this a little while? I would be shocked. I'd be beyond shocked if in every one of those instances, it's going to be a clear and concise discussion about what they're doing, probably about what they're just, you know, what they're doing this week.
Yep.
And you will leave that discussion in all instances. I mean, all of our commodity groups in Kentucky are so well staffed.
Mm-hmm.
We are so lucky.
Yep.
I do deal with other states. They're not well staffed, some of them. And one of their organizations is faltering or not doing well. Not in our state. We are so lucky.
Mm-hmm.
Call them. Ask them what they're doing. Yep. Just say, look, I want to know. Nobody's gonna turn you down or act condescending. I'd be shocked. They're going to tell you what's going on.
You sure. know, to add to how professional all of our commodity groups' staffs are in this state, I will go another step further and talk about how genuine they are at making themselves available
absolutely.
To producers, absolutely. To those phone calls, to people out in restaurants when they run into them. They know that they always have to be on. They're always carrying that message, waving that banner, so to speak, about their commodity and about Kentucky agriculture.
Yeah, you know, you call Debbie or Becky or Ray in Princeton. Talk to them about it.
Yep.
Call Laura Adam at Kentucky Corn Growers. Mm-hmm. They're going to talk. And also, Kentucky Corn Growers also provide staffing for small grains growers. So just call and ask them.
Right. Yep.
Just call and ask.
All those people that you just named, I'm on a first-name basis with. And that's why. Because
that's why.
They make themselves available to all of
Absolutely.
Us.
Absolutely.
That's right.
Yep. Great advocates.
So, well, Joseph, we appreciate you being here with us and being a part of our show. We want to thank you and thank our host for this week's information. And thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show and make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.